This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
May. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, welcoming you to Free Thought Radio, the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of freethinkers here in Madison, Wisconsin. We're located atheists and agnostics, working as a state church watchdog to preserve the constitutional principle of the separation between state and church.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is the weekend of May the 5th, 2012, Free Thought Radio broadcast from Madison, Wisconsin, and we also podcast everywhere.
Joining us for the second half of Free Thought Radio will be FFRF's senior staff attorney, Rebecca Markert, who's going to recap for you how busy, how besieged our legal department is, some of the most interesting recent violations. We now have four staff attorneys. And they're receiving hundreds of reports of state church violations that we try to act on as many as we can.
Are we roaming the country looking for violations?
No, they are finding us. And Rebecca will give you the inside scoop. And now, Dan, you just came back from Nittany, PA.
Nittany, well, that's the Nittany Valley, the Nittany Free Thoughts Association, which is one of our chapters.
It's new.
It's in State College, Pennsylvania, where PSU is. And I had a whirlwind week last week. With our chapter there, with Chuck Berry, the real Chuck Berry, and David DeGroot, and the PSU Atheist Agnostic Association, a lot of wonderful people, speeches, concerts, a panel,
They got a Day of Reason proclamation from their mayor, didn't they?
The mayor of State College, instead of the Day of Prayer proclaimed that last May the 3rd was the Day of Reason in that town. So it was a wonderful, wonderful time.
So welcome to that new chapter. And Dan, you also... We're part of a fight back against the National Day of Prayer with our chapter, the Triangle Freethought Association, which is Raleigh-Durham, just on Thursday.
Thursday, May the 3rd, which was supposedly the National Day of Prayer. But the chapter there beat the Christians to the punch and it reserved the state capitol for a day of reason instead of a day of prayer.
And listen up, folks. You can help protest that National Day of Prayer. It happens every year. We don't want to forget about it as soon as it's over. We want to keep protesting it. You can be part of FFRF's petition to President Barack Obama at whitehouse.gov/we the people. That's the section where people can petition him. And if 25,000 people sign the signature, he must respond. So search for National Day of Prayer. And Dan, why don't you read our petition?
We petition the Obama administration to end the unconstitutional National Day of Prayer, which violates the First Amendment. God and government are a dangerous mix. Congress in 1952 abridged freedom of conscience when, at the instigation of Billy Graham, it designated a National Day of Prayer, ordering the president to proclaim, quote, a National Day of Prayer on which the people of the U.S. may turn to God in prayer and meditation at churches, in groups, and as individuals. The president has neither the moral nor constitutional authority to dictate to Americans to pray, much less to tell citizens what to pray about or set aside an entire day for prayer. Whether to pray or believe in a God who answers prayers is an intensely precious personal decision protected under our First Amendment as a paramount matter of conscience. Don't let Christian evangelicals hijack our secular constitutional.
Now, we had promised to air a segment from the National News show that was last week. From Australia, called The Project. This is a big national daily program that interviewed Dan. I was interviewed, but I only ended up in the cutaways. And they also interviewed David Nichols with the Atheist Foundation of Australia about the Global Atheist Convention that we came back from, the historically largest atheist conference in the world with 4,000 participants. And so we now have an audio of that segment.
weekend, over 4,000 non-believers will congregate in Melbourne for the second Australian Atheist Convention. And with a country led by a self-confessed atheist, Prime Minister Julia Gillard, Australia is leading the way for so-called freethinkers.
There are millions of us on this planet who do live good, happy, moral, meaningful, productive lives without a religion.
For decades, the Western world has been shifting away from religion, and now the non-believers are demanding to be heard.
I don't despise religious people. I despise what they stand for.
Over the next 2 days, they'll descend on Melbourne for the biggest atheist event in Australian history. And they're not pulling any punches.
There are many problems associated with religion. It keeps women as second-grade citizens. It won't allow stem cell research. It is against science.
But organised religion isn't ready to give up yet.
I don't know if atheism is on the rise as such, but people talking about it are definitely on the rise. I live beside the cathedral. We can't move when there's a big service on, like Easter, Christmas. Certainly the immigrant communities have brought a lot of life to all the churches in Australia.
Since European settlement, Australia has been predominantly a country of Christians. In 1901, just 1% of the population professed to having non-Christian beliefs. Fast forward 100 years and it seems the number of godless Aussies is rising. From 2001 to 2006, atheism jumped by almost 30%, making it one of the fastest growing groups in Australia.
Well, I was raised in a Christian family. We went to church. We went door to door preaching. I believed it, I felt it, I loved it. It was very real.
Dan Barker is a key speaker at the conference. A former evangelical pastor, now turned atheist, Dan preached for 19 years before losing his faith.
In my early 30s, I went through a process of realizing that what I was preaching is not true. The motivation that drove me into the pulpit is the same one that drove me out.
Everybody from the convention will be an emissary for reality. Atheism doesn't want any special privileges. All we're after is equality, whereas religion doesn't want equality, it wants special privileges.
And Aussie atheists say it's time churches started paying their way.
The tax-exempt portion of religion is something in the order of $30 billion per year in Australia. We are supporting an idea that has no evidence with the tune of $30 billion.
Everyone brings what they have, atheist, Catholic, Protestant, Jew, Muslim. You can't wash it out of the system. So I would say if I was a politician, what's good in what the different religions have? How can we work with that?
And with conference goers paying up to $440, there's big money in bagging big religion.
I actually think atheists are fantastic. They keep us on our toes. Everyone is talking about it. I taught one of my courses on it. The students are interested. So it's up to us to have the answers.
I think the only hope for the world is a totally secular government.
That was a lot of fun being in Australia. Actually, the organizers said they just broke even.
Yes,
they didn't raise a lot of money.
That included all your meals, and it was a huge convention center.
So they just broke even on the thing. So closer to home now, so far this year, the Freedom From Religion Foundation has designated two student activist honorees, both high school students from the state of Tennessee. We recently interviewed Crystal Myers, whose article about atheism in state church was censored by her student paper, but got wider distribution as a result. Here's a new segment about our second honoree, Jeff Schott. This is out of Nashville News 5.
He went to school dressed as Jesus and came home in a cloud of controversy.
Now a 17-year-old from Spring Hill says his costume choice on Fictional Character Day has earned him a scholarship from an atheist group. New at 6, News Channel 5's Heather Graff is live at the school where it happened with reaction from the young man caught in the middle. Heather.
Well, Jeff Schott is a sophomore here at Summit High School, and when he showed up that morning dressed as Jesus Christ, he says the principal approached him almost immediately and started asking questions.
It wasn't initially so much that they were going to ask me to take it off. That's not even one of the first things that we talked about. It was more like whether or not Jesus was actually a fictional character. So first we had that conversation.
Now, Jeff's costume, which you see here, included a robe and a sash along with nail holes in his hands. Jeff also carried a hammer because he says Jesus was a carpenter. He tells us school administrators never asked him to change, but they did express concern that his outfit would prompt some heated debate about religion and in the process interrupt class or distract other students at Summit. Now, Jeff, who is an atheist, says he felt somewhat pressured, and so he ended up taking the costume off before the first bell even rang. But the director of schools in Williamson County tells us the principal was well within his rights to have that conversation.
We certainly monitor students' attire and make sure that what they're wearing is appropriate in that it will not create a learning distraction for the other boys and girls in the school. And this had the potential of doing that.
I was the only person who was pulled aside because of the actual character they were being. Other people had to take off like a mask or something because you're not allowed to cover your face, or maybe their skirt was too short. And so it was actually breaking the dress code. But as far as the dress code was concerned, I wasn't breaking any rules.
Now, Fictional Character Day here at the school was actually held back in January, but Jeff's costume is making headlines now because it caught the attention of an atheist group called the Freedom From Religion Foundation, who gave Jeff a $1,000 scholarship after hearing about what happened. Now, Jeff tells me that was an unexpected surprise, but it was not at all his intention. We are live tonight from Spring Hill. Heather Graff, News Channel 5 HD.
And actually...
Thanks, Heather. The Freedom From Religion Foundation also sent a letter to Williamson County Schools expressing their concern over the incident. Jeff says he has no plans to take legal action against the school system, nor did he ever.
Jeff Schott was our first Paul J. Gaylor Memorial Student Activist, which I endowed a $1,000 scholarship and plan to endow every year.
Because of your
father. My dad grew up in the South and he would have really enjoyed Jeff's spunk.
Coming up, more news, Annie Laurie's debate with a mayor on National Fox TV, and then we'll talk with senior staff attorney Rebecca Markert. May the 7th is the birthday of two non-believing composers, Brahms and Tchaikovsky. We're listening to a little bit of Brahms' Hungarian Dance No. 21. Brahms born in 1833, Tchaikovsky in 1840. Stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
My name's Forrest Radford. I think it's more important to teach children truth than Bronze Age myth, and we have to tell children the truth if they're going to have any chance in the future for the earth.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a national membership 501c3 educational charity. We publish a newspaper, Free Thought Today. We'd be glad to send you a sample copy if you go to fffrf.org, or better yet, you can join us there, or you can call 1-800-335-4021. We have 18,000 members, and we'd like to be 180,000, so join us.
We hope today you will join us. Coming up, we're going to catch up with FFRF's legal activism and the work of our legal department. We'll talk with senior staff attorney Rebecca Markert, who in particular has recently been dealing with a state church violation involving a Christian cross on public property in front of a fire station in Woonsocket, Rhode Island. Annie Laurie debated the mayor from Woonsocket on National Fox TV last Sunday.
I think if they want it moved, they should come down here and move it themselves.
That was disabled veteran Tom Poole speaking out to save his town's World War II memorial in Rhode Island. The memorial displays a cross, a symbol an atheist group is now fighting to have removed. They say this display is a violation of the separation of church and state. Joining us now to talk about it further is Woonsocket Mayor Leo Fontaine and Annie Laurie Gaylor, co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation organization. Welcome to you both. Ms. Gaylor, I want to ask you, I mean, this particular display, it does include a cross. It's been there for 91 years. So why now is there outrage for it being there? Why now the call for it to be removed?
I don't think there's outrage. What we are doing is educating the town of Woonsocket that what they have is something that is unconstitutional and exclusionary of non-Christians, and sends a message that Christians are insiders, and if they die in World War I, we mourn them. But if you're Jewish or atheist or whatever, forget about it. And we are not saying destroy this memorial, this cross. This should go on private property. And there are already vet organizations that say they have room for this memorial. If there's going to be anything on public property, whether it's to honor veterans or anyone else, it should not send a message that the town is a theocracy, that you're expected to be Christian, that we favor Christianity. All we are asking for is that this be placed someplace else. And we have also taken this complaint on behalf of a citizen, taxpayer, resident who has to drive past this every day and is very offended, is not a Christian and feels this is wrong and knows The law is on our side.
All right, let's bring in the mayor here. Is that a viable solution for you, Mayor, to move this to private property? What's your position on this particular display?
This monument has been there for almost 100 years, as you mentioned. It was dedicated initially to a soldier, William Joliker, who gave his life and never made it home. He's buried over in France right now under a very similar cross. And this monument was never erected as a religious symbol. It was done as a tribute to him. It was rededicated in 1952 to three other soldiers that died in World War II and three brothers. So a mother lost all three sons, and this was the way that our community at the time chose to pay tribute to these soldiers. And I just don't see where we should be taking it down at this point for any reason. And I've spoken with members of the family, the Joliker family, that really are hurt by this. And I think it's really incumbent upon us as a community to try to defend their honor and the integrity of this monument. It's not there as a Christian symbol. It's there as an honor to them.
And it replicates symbol.
You know, again, it's been there for almost 100 years without any complaint, and I think that the Supreme Court has ruled in similar cases, such as down in Texas, Van Orden versus Perry, and Salazar versus Bono, where Christian symbols that evoke other than that have been allowed and have been ruled constitutional. A Latin cross can evoke not only a Christian symbol. Excuse me if I could finish. The cross has been shown to evoke more than just a Christian symbol. It's a symbol of honor for our soldiers, and as was ruled
not
in these two cases that I just mentioned.
Let me give Ms. Gaylor a chance to jump in here, because obviously she has objections to what you're saying, Ms. Gaylor.
Yes. We have sent a detailed letter to the mayor, who knows the facts. Van Orden is not a cross. There is no a court decision by any court in the United States that says that any public official may permanently erect a Christian cross on public property. And the other case that he mentioned, the land was divested. There is not a cross on public property in the Salazar case. Courts have ruled over and over again that the Latin cross, which is what people wear across their necks, which is on every Christian steeple, stands as the pinnacle symbol of Christianity and sends an impermissible message of endorsement by the government if it is ever allowed on public property. It is not allowed on public property. So the law is with us, and I think that the quarrel of the mayor or any of the people in Woonsocket is not with FFRF, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, but it is with our secular government that we have no God, no Christianity in our government, with the Supreme Court president.
That was Annie Laurie Gaylor on Shannon Bream's show last Sunday on Fox News, talking about one of our recent lawsuits.
It's not a lawsuit. It's
one
just
of our
a complaint,
complaints.
And,
that's right.
We don't expect it to be a lawsuit. We hope we will prevail with education. And we have many, many lawsuits. I think this is not one of them. We have many, many state church complaints. This is the only one we have going in Rhode Island. And it's very heated. We are getting tremendous crank mail, hate mail, phone calls, threats. Out of Rhode Island, we've already seen in the past, Rhode Island is not exactly a hotbed of enlightenment and how they tend to treat people who are atheists or who stand up for separation of church and state. So that's one of the things that we're going to be talking about with Senior Staff Attorney Rebecca Margaret, who wrote the letter originally in Woonsocket, who's been getting some of this hate mail, and talking about the principle of the matter and not the emotional craziness.
And they complain about us being an outside Wisconsin group meddling in their affairs. But when they need legal help, they've turned to the Liberty Council, which is out of Virginia.
And of course, both of our groups are national, so that's sort of a silly thing
to say. And Matt Staver was saying that we are trying to squelch all religious talk in public by taking down crosses, when of course we think they should display that cross in an appropriate private location.
Now, Dan, you introduced the concept of our free-thinking composers, and I'll let you talk a little bit more about them, for the composers for the week, but we haven't done an advertisement for FFRF's Free Thought of the Day for a while, and that is where you can find all the documentation about famous freethinkers, people who have made a difference in the world, whether they're progressives or reformers or activists or artists or in this case, composers. And tell us a little bit more about Brahms and Tchaikovsky.
Well, Brahms was an agnostic, non-believing composer who called himself a humanist, who only wrote one requiem, which we can read about. If you go to Free Thought of the Day on our website, you can see more about him in his freethinking views. Tchaikovsky was also he's one of those composers that had to come out of two closets as a non-believer, and we're listening to a little bit of his concerto number one, piano concerto number one.
So you can go to Free Thought of the Day /news, and you can find the Free Thought of the Days, or you go to our homepage. It's all over there. You can get these sent to your inbox. Now, coming up, we're going to talk with Senior Staff Attorney Rebecca Markert about all of the work the legal department does in trying to defend the constitutional wall of separation between church and state at FFRF.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker, and that music was Pack Up Your Sins and Go to the Devil in Hades, which is what a lot of people from Rhode Island have been telling us to do. That was an Irving Berlin song, by the way, a non-believing composer. I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we're very grateful to be joined in the studio. We have a studio guest today, Rebecca Markert, our senior staff attorney. And she is the infamous attorney who took the letter, who wrote the letter to Rhode Island, Woonsocket, which is creating a huge furor in Rhode Island. They're very easy to get a furor, I guess, out of them. And why don't you recap what that complaint was about?
Sure. We were contacted by a local resident who comes in frequent contact with the cross. In fact, this person drives past it every day. The person had contacted us to ask if a cross on public property was legal. We wrote back and said, generally, no. We'd like to find out some more information about this particular cross. So we did some background investigation and determined that, yes, we believe it's unconstitutional. So we drafted a letter to the city.
Because where does it sit? Where does the cross sit?
It's actually in front of a fire station in Woonsocket, Rhode Island.
And I think we have some pictures of it online. It's on a big triangular kind of cement clump, and then it's a cross, and then they have dedicated it twice now to particular people who died in World War I or World War II.
Yes, it started off in 1921 as a World War I memorial to one particular individual, and then they rededicated it to other people who had died in World War II.
And do we know how it ended up in front of the fire department?
I'm not clear on that.
We don't know yet.
Yeah.
So you sent quite a standard letter detailing the law. Do you want to recap what that law is on crosses?
Sure. You know, no court, a final resort, has ever upheld the erection of a cross on public property. So the letter basically delineates that law, outlines that, as anything, certainly not a war memorial, a cross cannot be situated on public property.
Well, I mean, because, of course, it would just imply that all veterans, all people who died in the war, all people we're honoring are Christians.
Right.
Now, there's a difference between a red cross, quote unquote, a plus sign, and a Latin cross. What does this cross look like?
This cross looks like a Latin cross. It looks like a Christian cross. It's not similar to the red cross, which is short. It's the preeminent symbol of Christianity.
Now, as soon as we launched this complaint, it really has taken off. I think there's a kind of right-wing radio show radio station that is really going after FFRF and saying things like, we go roaming the country looking for violations, and we're picking on Rhode Island. So I thought it would be very useful to have you come on the program, Rebecca, and recap all the kinds of complaints that we get and talk about them and where we get complaints from and what we've done. And what did you find out about Rhode Island?
Certainly. Well, you know, even during this whole debacle, the press is always asking, you know, who brought this to you? You know, how many complaints do you get? And I am constantly telling them that we're a membership organization. We have members in every single state in the country. And they come to us with complaints and questions about what's going on in their community. And just this year alone, as of April 30th, earlier this week, We had over 800 complaints, or actually just contacts about state church questions and issues for this year.
I mean, that's a huge amount to field, and some of them we can't do anything about or are right. automatically, you know, we have to close.
Right.
But most of those are, well, how many letters have gone out officially this year?
We have 293 letters that have gone out from those 800 contacts. And some of them, you know, are still pending. We're still investigating and may generate into official letters of complaint as well.
So are we picking on Rhode Island then?
We definitely are not. I broke it down to our top five states for this year. And the first state is Tennessee. Followed by California, Texas, Florida, and Pennsylvania. In fact, we only had two complaints out of Rhode Island this year. One was the cross, which obviously generated a complaint. And then the other one was a private issue that we couldn't get involved in.
So they are not being picked on.
No, certainly not.
Nor are we picking, you know, when we write a letter of complaint, we're not picking on someone. We're trying to educate.
Exactly.
And give them the law. We assume the best. We assume they don't realize they're violating the law.
Right, right.
So, all right. So then last year, how many letters of complaint went out?
Last year, we had 565 official letters of complaint that went out. That was actually increased from 2010 when we had 358.
And all of this is, what we're doing is adding more staff attorneys because you guys are overwhelmed.
Right.
So, I mean, we're dedicating a lot of our resources to trying to help our members and members of the public who contact us, who have very few places to go for support on what the law is and writing letters of complaint. So right. those are going to increase as our staff increases.
Yeah, but now that we're talking about it on the show, we're going to get a lot more.
Well, and that's the other thing. A lot of times when these letters of complaint do get publicized and they're generated in the media, it generates a lot more complaints. We do get a lot more emails from people who said, I heard about this, and this is actually going on in my community, so what can you do about that?
But we do not go roaming. You know, it's like we say, stop. We've got enough to do.
Right, right.
But we take this very seriously.
Right. And even, you know, some of our own staffers will say, I read this in the New York Times or I read this, in this newspaper. And, you know, we're just inundated with other requests that we can't do it.
Now, when you talk about, I think, a classic example of complaining about something, generating more complaints is in the South, where we have taken and stopped a lot of sports prayer, graduation prayer, and a lot of those have been your cases in this year. Do you want to talk about what's happened in the last year?
Sure.
With
well,
that?
Particularly, I had mentioned before that we're getting a lot of complaints out of Tennessee, and about 2 years ago, we took a complaint over prayer at a high school in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, which is part of the Hamilton County School District, and there we got the prayer stopped. They were praying over the PA system at high school football games. We got the complaint or the prayer stopped, so it was a good victory, but it generated a lot of complaints out of the state of Tennessee. We were contacted by countless students and parents who said it's also happening in my county.
Or worse things.
Right, right.
And so, first let's recap the law on sports prayer, graduation prayer, prayer in school.
Well, you can't do it.
Right.
The school can't schedule a prayer at sporting events or any school-sponsored activity.
I mean, there's a series of Supreme Court decisions dating from the 60s right up until the 2000s addressing each of these things.
Public schools, right?
Public schools.
Public schools,
right.
Exactly. Yes, it's very clear and very strong.
So what have we done about that? I mean, we've contacted...
We have contacted all of the school districts about which we got complaints. We contacted and asked them to change their practices, and we've been successful. But because we were getting so many and a lot of repeat complaints, what we did was sent a memorandum of law to all of the superintendents in Tennessee, letting them know what the law was.
And then we went ahead, and Stephanie Schmidt, one of our other new staff attorneys, Mississippi.
And Kentucky.
Kentucky and Alabama, right? Didn't we? I think so.
Nope. It was actually, we did the letter to Tennessee in 2011. And then this fall, we also had a lot of complaints in Kentucky, actually. Bell County, Kentucky, where they were doing prayer before the football games, too. And that was another one where we got the prayer stopped. And it was the same situation in Tennessee where all of a sudden we were getting complaints from many different school districts. And so we just decided, because we were getting many out of Kentucky, Mississippi, and Louisiana, we just wrote to the supers in all of those states as well.
And then you, one of these things that has appalled me is you've had to stop, I think it's twice now, kindergarten prayer.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us about those cases?
A lot of these are teachers who are teaching children how to pray before their snack time. So it can be in the form of a song, or just, you know, the standard mealtime prayer.
And you stopped prayer, was it this year or late last year in Tennessee in kindergarten?
Both, actually. But,
yeah. Okay. So, I mean, that is really, really out there.
Yes.
Because they're so small.
Yes.
And the law, I mean, that law dates to 62, 63.
Yes.
So, well, and so I guess that Bible Belt, we'd expect this kind of reaction in the Bible Belt, but we really get this almost everywhere.
Yes, we do. That's another thing that I constantly am telling members of the press is that, you know, it's not just the South. We also get them from the North. Obviously, Rhode Island, we get some from Michigan and California. They're all over.
Now, I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about, you were involved in writing letters on behalf of both of our two new student activist honorees, both out of the state of Tennessee. So why don't you talk a little bit about those cases?
Sure. Well, the first one was involved Crystal Myers, who was the atheist student in Lenoir City, Tennessee. She had written an article about being an atheist in public school, in her public school. And that editorial was actually censored by her school. And in the editorial, she sort of outlined a lot of state church separation problems, including prayer at athletic events and at graduation, some religious proselytizing that was occurring by teachers.
And didn't she also talk about prayer at her school board?
Yes, yes.
We talked with her on our show about a month ago.
Yes. So we sent off a letter to the school district to let them know of these violations, and they did actually stop prayer at the school board.
Which is terrific.
Yes.
I mean, that's congratulations.
Yes. School board prayer, particularly in the Sixth Circuit, which encompasses Tennessee, is a very, there's a very strong decision that says it's part of a school-sponsored activity and therefore unconstitutional.
Now, where are we with the rest of our complaint about on her behalf?
We have not heard officially from the school board on the rest of it, but we're still waiting.
So, we are talking with very busy senior staff attorney Rebecca Markert about FFRF State Church legal work. I'm Annie-Laure Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker.
And we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about the letter that you wrote on behalf of Jess Schott and some of your other letters of complaint that are going out trying to solve these entanglements between religion and government.
I'm Fred Schwartz from Chester, Connecticut, and I think FFRF is doing some of the most important work in the country right now.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
And this is our final segment. I'm Annie-Laure Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And we're continuing our talk with Rebecca Markert, who's the senior staff attorney at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, who has written, as she told you, many hundreds of letters of complaint and fielded complaints on violations of state church separation. Rebecca, you were telling us about Crystal Meyer in Tennessee, but another complaint in Tennessee, we heard the news earlier on today's show about Jeff Schott. Tell us about that.
Yes, he was a student in Tennessee who dressed up as Jesus Christ for Fictional Character Day. Unfortunately, before the school day started, he felt that he had to take the costume off after he was approached by three officials from the school who wanted to know what he was dressed up as and had mentioned, you know, they wished that he wouldn't have done that.
And they wished he, they said, we're too bad you're not Zeus.
Right.
Because Zeus is fictional, but Jesus, well.
Right.
Well, and so Jeff also had some state church complaints to tell us about.
Yep. He had also contacted us, not only just about his Jesus costume, but also that there were some debates about creationism that were happening in his science class, where evolution was sort of questioned by teachers. And those who believed in evolution were sort of made to feel bad about that.
Yeah, well, she said it wasn't true, basically.
Right, right.
The teachers. So,
well, if man came from monkeys, why are there still monkeys?
So, we haven't had a response from them either, or have we?
We got sort of a very vague response from the school district on that. You know, basically saying that they took appropriate action, but
didn't
not
tell
detail.
Us. That's right.
So we're going to follow up further with them.
But better than no response.
Right.
Now,
right.
Both Jeff Schott and Crystal Myers, whom we've been advocating on behalf of, who got our $1,000 Student Activist Awards a month ago, their write-ups are in the current issue of Free Thought Today, the April issue. We still have some copies left, even though it's turned into May, and people can look for that. We'll be going online, or you can ask for a sample copy at ffrf.org. Now, Rebecca, National Day of Prayer just ended. Thank goodness. So what, starting to field all those complaints, and there'll be more, but what have we been doing so far?
Well, we started getting complaints. We actually categorized them into sort of three different areas. One where a mayor has issued a proclamation saying that May 3rd was National Day of Prayer or the Day of Prayer in their community. And then also just a general mayor participating in a mayor's prayer breakfast that happens to coincide with National Day of Prayer. And then there's also the area where cities are actively involved in organizing and promoting these events. Just this week, or just last week, we sent a letter to Odessa, Texas, where the city is actively involved in putting on the prayer breakfast. In fact, they do it all. They organize the site, they organize the speakers, they sell the tickets. And
it's on their website.
It's on their website. And the mayor suggests whom to invite. They actually got Reverend Pinker, who wrote 90 Minutes in Heaven, to come and be their keynote speaker.
And how much does he charge?
He charges $2,500.
Plus
expenses. So, you know, his flight, he also requires a rental, his lodging. So they probably racked up a good bill.
But why can't a city do that? If that's what the majority of the people want, why can't a mayor just do what the people want?
Well, they can't expend taxpayer funds for a religious event. And this is more than just any religious event. It's a prayer event that's inherently religious.
And they're organizing it.
Right.
It's not just some other group saying this is the mayor's prayer breakfast, which is bad enough, but
right.
At least the mayor's not organizing it.
Yep.
Well, so we're looking into that, trying to figure out what to do about it, because this one's a pretty egregious one.
Yes, yes. And this one, actually, we found out more information after an open records request. They sent all this information back to us.
And you found out what the secretary was arranging.
The city's
everything.
Secretary, yep, is arranging everything. And the public information officer is the one who's selling tickets, the one who's in charge of open records requests.
Now, I think it was Patrick Elliott, one of our staff attorneys, wrote the mayor of Tampa.
Yes.
What's going on there?
It's similar of a mayor participating in
a
breakfast.
I don't think he's organizing it, but it's one of the National Day of Prayer Task Force events at, the name of that stadium? It's a big football field or something. And he's going to be there. And you can't go unless you're a Christian and unless you agree with the National Day of Prayer Task Force on their particular ideas about Christianity. So that one sends a very exclusionary and divisive message, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Jews not welcome.
They wouldn't invite me to sing Nothing Fails Like Prayer?
No, but I mean, they wouldn't even invite religious people who don't agree with them.
This evangelical.
Yes. So
we also sent a letter to Springdale, Arkansas about their mayor prayer breakfast, where they're also selling tickets through the city.
Now, we also have lawsuits continuing against the National Day of Prayer. We have one in Colorado and in state court, in appeals court, and we have an ongoing case in Arizona where we're suing the governors. And now I don't know this year whether all the governors signed up, but I'm sure they did, you know.
Signed up for the proclamations?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to look into that.
We need to look into that. Yeah, it's not advertised anymore on the National Day of Prayer's website.
Since we sued.
Right.
And sued them. And she was pretty mad about that. Focus on the families.
Dobson.
Shirley Dobson was pretty angry about getting sued. And actually, we ended up dropping her. But we had discovery, so we learned a great deal. And so they really got more closeted about what they're doing.
Yes.
But they always have their parlor event at the Capitol, and they invite members of the military industrial complex and judges and members of Congress. And it's pretty hand in glove with the government. So we appreciate everything you do, Rebecca, to keep religion out of government. And do you have a message for public officials?
Stay out of
the religion business.
Keep religion out of government.
Thank you, Rebecca. And thank you, Dave. Dave is our producer and engineer, Dave McCann, and our announcer is Buzz Kemper. This show, Free Thought Radio, is recorded here in Madison, Wisconsin. You can sign up for the podcast, go to ffrf.org/radio, or to listen to any of the archives of past shows.
So, yes, ask for information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. You can get the April issue while it lasts with more information about our student activists. You can support FFRF's very important state church litigation and our work to stay out of court, to end violations without going to court, by contacting us at ffrf.org and joining us. Look for our ad next week in the Washington Post. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday.